Hey everybody, welcome back to the Damage Report. It is Wednesday. I'm Johnny Rolla. JR Jackson is here.
Boom.
Obviously.
Bam. JR Wednesdays.
Happen. Yeah.
The second of the new year, am I right?
I think it is. And we're very glad to have you here, especially today, because of course last night was Donald Trump's presidential address in prime time.
So presidential.
It was very presidential. We're going to talk about that, obviously, and some of the responses to it. But we've got more beyond just that, including a couple of good news stories. So we unfortunately yesterday didn't get to Florida's implementation of their Amendment 4 that gives those with past felonies who served their time the right to vote again. We're going to be breaking down that and how many people it's going to affect. And then also two amazing pieces of news out of New York City on healthcare and workers' rights that are just great. And especially to have them back to back, we're going to be talking about those. And then progress on R. Kelly, perhaps. A new scrutiny of the singer and potentially a new investigation as well. So we're going to talk about that. Oh, we also have a great guest. So a Yale psychiatrist is going to be joining the show. She has been sounding the alarm about Donald Trump's mental health for quite a while. And she's going to join the show and she's going to break down why, if you have concerns about Donald Trump's mental state, it is probably only going to get worse from here in 2019 for a number of different reasons, which we will talk about. So very exciting, why don't we jump right into it. Last night, Donald Trump addressed the nation and a lot of people saw it because the networks did cover it. He's the president, I guess. He was talking about a national emergency or something, supposedly. Anyway, in advance of it, we of course broke down the truth of what's happening at the border. And it's a good thing that we did because we predicted that he would lie and lo and behold, his speech was filled with lies. So, JR, we did live coverage of it for TYT last night. You weren't there, so this is the first I'm hearing from what you thought of the president's address. Did he make the case for why we need a border wall?
Well, that's the thing. You have to, in looking at something like this, when it's as divided and contentious as it has been, what you want to do is find a way to maybe shift it, move it to maybe argument more on your side. You want to convince people. So telling people that are for no reason are going to believe everything you say no matter what. If you say we need border wall because there's too many cats down there and they'll go, whoa, it doesn't matter, right? So those people you don't have to address. So I went into it thinking, how is he going to convince people who are like going, you know what, I'm a little concerned about the situation at the border. I just don't really believe that it's as bad as they're saying, obviously because of the lies that his administration has been telling. And he didn't accomplish any of that. None of that happened. So either that wasn't the objective or they missed the mark. Yeah. I'm not sure which, I'm sure which one it was. That wasn't their objective. They don't care about convincing anyone that isn't already on their side. In fact, if you're not on his side, what he does is demonize those people and call them un-American and against him. Remember after he won the election, he visited states that he won. Because he only represents those states and those folks.
So was there anything in the speech that surprised you? Anything that was in there or what that wasn't in there?
I tweeted about this and a lot of people were upset about it. That I was actually disappointed at how little effort was given to that. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow. At first I said, oh, it's over already? And we already knew it wasn't going to be that long because they had previous to whenever these things come out, we know about how long it'll be. But I said, okay, so there was some instances of violence and murder that happened. And then followed by, okay, I'm done, with such a low level of energy, talk about low energy when he was running the campaign and talking about Jeb Bush. I said, I don't think his heart was in this. That was the first thing I saw. I was like, I was disappointed at his lack of interest in this, considering he shut down the government over this is his pet project, yet he didn't seem very invested last night at all.
Yeah, despite all of that though, many on the right wing liked it. Mm-hmm. I went to Breitbart and I thought, maybe they expected more. No, they were a fan of it. And the particular compliments that Donald Trump receives, both on cable news and in print from right-wing Trump supporters, to be fair, it is amazing. Like, people like to make jokes about white male mediocrity and how low the bar is sometimes, but they were really saying that he stuck to the script. He didn't go crazy. He didn't fume. He read the speech. And it's like, I'm old enough to remember how the right approached Barack Obama when he used a teleprompter. Fact that he used a teleprompter, even though we know that he can speak extemporaneously about any number of complicated topics, was shown as proof that he was a simpleton. But Donald Trump, simply because he was able to get through the speech, with constant weird nose breathing and all of that, that is a mark of how presidential he is. It's ridiculous how
standards
change.
It was the most presidential he's ever been. I don't know if you were going to mention this, but Lindsey Graham said it's the most presidential I've ever seen President Trump. That is extremely sad if that's the most presidential you've ever seen him.
That is sad.
So, he was able to read. He didn't mispronounce the word wall.
Yeah.
And as far as we know, there was no pile of. He didn't release his bowels in the chair.
That is true, as far as we know. So what I found-
You're making me say horrible things.
If I was to do a Family Feud style thing of words that you would associate with, I don't watch the show, so maybe this analogy will suck. Words you'd associate with the speech, I think the number one thing would be sort of, would either be boring or inconsequential. Right. I don't think that this is really going to affect the discussion very much. Because as you said, like, so he said that there he found some immigrants who arguably killed people. Like he fudged the details of those cases, but yeah, you talk about that all the time. We understand.
And by the
that.
Way, so okay, yeah. So there was these instances where people who came in the country illegally committed crimes and people's lives were affected and people died. It's horrible.
Yeah.
So when you give these instances and then say therefore we need a wall, you have to follow up by saying this happens at this degree, therefore this wall needs to be built to keep it from happening because it's an epidemic.
Which you didn't do.
You know what death epidemic is happening in our country? Gun violence.
Yeah.
So the wall around the NRA and every gun shop hasn't been built yet. And in fact, when we see a massacre of people and we don't talk about that, then you wonder, how much do you really care about the lives of the people that you're now putting forward for your symbolic wall that will have your name on it because you want to have a triumphancy over for yourself. Yeah. That's what this is about. So even when you say, oh, you guys don't care about those people whose lives were affected, were killed by these immigrants. No, you don't, because you're using their story, their horrible, sad story, to push your agenda that means nothing, that actually won't change those things.
Yeah, and like, as you point out, those are tragedies, but we already understand them, so we don't think that that's a reason to have a border wall. We don't think it really has anything to do with the border wall. So his arguments they were not gonna persuade new people to his side. And the thing is, he could have put some pressure on the Democrats. One way to do that would be to give a fig leaf of some concessions, saying, so he wanted to make the case that it's a moral crisis at the border. I care, that's why I want to wall off our country. And you know what, I care about the people here too. And so here's why we're gonna help to solidify the legal status of the Dreamers at the same time. He could have done something, and that would have put pressure on the Democrats, and to a random person watching, this would have made him seem reasonable. And like an actual president, in a way slightly less shallow than just that he read words without falling off his chair. Right. But he didn't do that. He didn't do any of that. So I don't think that what he said really changes the situation. I also don't think that the Democratic response really changes much. It was okay, I guess, in terms of what they said. But you watched it, right?
Yeah.
So the optics of it were rough, as you'll see in this clip.
The fact is, President Trump must stop holding the American people hostage, must stop manufacturing a crisis, and must reopen the government. Thank you. Leader Schumer.
Thank you, Speaker Pelosi.
Okay, so you see that there were some issues there. Like when you, like JR, say John Adarola.
John Adarola.
Thank you, JR Jackson. That's
so
weird. No, you look at the person you're thanking.
It's so weird. No, it's the thing.
It was very artificial and robotic and unnatural.
No. And that's the thing. And everybody knows we do all the shows on 2IT without teleprompters, even the introduction stuff and presenting the stories, which is a tough thing to do. So I get the use of teleprompters when you want to get the things correct that you're saying.
Yeah.
But we're all human beings. And you have to have a level of skill to be able to say what you mean and engage with the people you're talking to without it having to be like, make sure you say, as I said before.
Yeah.
Like, you know how to say, as I said before, without having to read it and do it to that degree. What happened? Yeah. They've done this before. They had their weird, that Trump actually made, their weird meeting with him, and that was impromptu.
Yeah.
That was off
and
the
that
cuff.
That was better.
Schumer and Pelosi sat in like normal people and had a conversation and actually were convincing and looked like the people who were thinking in that situation. They couldn't do it again.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. And I understand some people will say, well, what they said is more important than how they said it. And I don't even disagree, but the stakes are pretty high. We do need good messengers as well as a good message. I also have issues with the message, but I also don't think, like they were basically, they reiterated their position. Okay, that's what they did, that's great. I agree with their position more than I do with Donald Trump's. But again, we do need it to be delivered in the correct way. And I think that Bernie Sanders did do that a little bit later on the night. And even Chuck Schumer, I think he was more effective after that little speech that you saw a snippet of. So he tweeted out showing a video compilation showing Donald Trump's hypocrisy on this issue, which you'll see here.
I actually think the president would be blamed. If there is a shutdown, I think it would be a tremendously negative mark on the president of the United States. He's the one that has to get people together.
Mm-hmm. They're not going to be talking who the head of the House was, the head of the Senate, who's running things in Washington. So I really think the pressure is on the president.
So look, hypocrisy no longer matters. We understand that. And they will say different circumstances without ever explaining what exactly those are. But I think that was a little bit more useful potentially. But again, I would say overall my evaluation is neither what he said nor the response from Democratic leadership really changes the situation. Right. The shutdown continues. People are still hurting. There's no crisis of the sort that Donald Trump is attempting to describe. But we are in a bit of a crisis because of the choice to continue the shutdown.
Yeah, I mean, think about if you're going to start traveling and you're flying in somewhere, you might start to worry about the level of security we have, the level of interest that people who are not getting paid to ensure that security have. So that needs to be addressed as well.
Exactly.
We're going to start bringing these things. There's so many things you can bring up. It's a disaster.
Exactly, yeah. Unfortunately, we're not paid to do that, unfortunately, for them. I wish that we were. Okay, we're going to take our first break. We come back, some other reactions to what went on. A bit more productive on the side of new Representative AOC. And we also have, how did the AP conduct their fact checking of last night's address after this?
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. So after Donald Trump's address, there was an urgent need for fact-checking because of the many lies and misuse of statistics and all of that. We did some live on TYT, many other organizations, either on TV to some extent, but a lot in print, did a great job of pointing out where numbers were misused and all of that. Not everyone did a great job, though, and the AP was, I think, deservedly mocked online for one tweet that they sent saying this, AP fact check. Democrats put the blame for the shutdown on Trump, but it takes two to tango. Trump's demand for $5.7 billion for his border wall is one reason for the budget impasse. The Democrats' refusal to approve the money is another. That is technically accurate, I suppose. Seems a little lazy, a little slanted for the AP in particular. And so, of course, they have been mocked about that. I understand that journalism is difficult, and you don't want to be criticized for being slanted in one direction. But whatever they have come up with as an alternative to journalism sucks. I will just say that.
So, it takes two to tango. First off, if your fact check has to include it takes two to tango, that's not part of the fact. Mm-hmm. Revelations there. So it takes two to tango is just, it's an aside to set up your opinion, gotta be honest. So once you do, so a bank robber runs into a bank, mm-hmm. and then the teller decides to push the alarm button and not give him the money right away. But he's shot, so therefore it takes two to tango. He asks for the money because he needs, maybe the bank robber needs the money. Mm-hmm. He really does need it. He's on some tough times and he decides to go ahead and take some money. And then so the bank, the teller doesn't cooperate with his demands.
Yeah.
It takes two to tango. Nobody would have got shot if he just given over the money.
Yeah.
Sure, but maybe you don't just give over the money.
Yeah, maybe. Yes, okay.
They're both at
fault. I punched you in the face, but you could have ducked it. Takes two to be punched in the face. So look, it's laughable, but it has no bearing on the facts. So there's a couple of reasons why that's a ridiculous take for this. So The shutdown initially started when Republicans had unified control of government. So it's ridiculous to state that the Democrats share equal blame for us ending up in this shutdown situation. The Senate voted, you know, we don't have the exact numbers because it was a voice vote, but they voted effectively unanimously in favor of a bill that would fund the government. We can't get that with the Democrats in the House voting for the same thing. We can't get that because suddenly the Republicans have backed off because Donald Trump has put pressure on them because he wants the wall. That variable that has changed is not the Democrats' responsibility. That is Republican cowardice in the Senate that has resulted in no bill going to the president's desk. So there are multiple reasons there where you can point out that there are multiple people to blame. That's true. I would blame Donald Trump. I would also blame Mitch McConnell. Absolutely. I would probably blame the right-wing radio and TV hosts that have put pressure on Trump to make him think that the wall is his hill to die on. So there are multiple people to blame. The Democrats in this particular case aren't among that list.
So when we talk about how the Republicans weren't able to pass this when they had control of both chambers and also obviously the presidency in the first 2 years, they point to, hey, but you know, we needed some Democrats on board because the Senate, there was too many Democrats to keep us from taking it all away to the president. So now you think somehow when there's even more Democrats in the House now, that you're gonna convince more of them? What makes you think that's gonna be the right way to go about this? It's because they don't believe that. What they want it to now be is, this has nothing to do with the wall anymore. This has to do with a political fight and trying to make one side look worse. They don't actually, say this $5.7 billion is given to him. He's not gonna do anything with that.
Yeah, he will want far more money, of course.
He's gonna need far more money.
And look, I think it's weird because I was just trusted, AP, they just write sort of, you know, straight lists of what happened, and other people use it in ad context and all that stuff. But another AP politics tweet from the end of last year, sort of questionable too. Parts of the government are shutting down after Democrats refuse to meet President Trump's demands for $5 billion to start erecting a Mexican border wall. So again, what they're saying is not technically wrong, but Donald Trump and his demand are the passive part of that sentence.
Absolutely.
It's the Democrats that caused it. Okay, that's a weird way to say it. I think, look, I could make an analogy, but better ones are already available on Twitter with Death Star PR tweeting, parts of Alderaan are shutting down after Princess Leia refused to meet Darth Vader's demands for the location of the rebel base. Technically, it was Grand Moff Tarkin, nerds, okay? Darth Vader wasn't there yet. Anyway, but good point there. So keep an eye on the AP because they're doing quite a bit of work to provide cover for Donald Trump in this ridiculous.
And think about how Twitter accounts work. Like there's the verified and there's the whole authority nature of being a source like the AP. But there's just people that are tweeting, by the way, you know. So if someone tweets on who knows what their perspective is, they work for the AP. And like, you know what, I'm sick of this. And they tweet out something in the AP's name.
Yeah.
So, you know, just keep in mind, we're in such a technological age, it's not necessarily the AP speaking, you know?
Yeah, it's a person
who
might have a bias. And I'm not saying that they're the devil, but I would keep an eye on their Twitter activity. And if you see something sort of weird, feel free to send it to us. But I wanna move on to other responses. I wanna give credit to Rachel Maddow. Last night, she had a show that was gonna take place as this address was going on from the president, meaning that whichever guests were on the latter half of that show were gonna be able to respond almost immediately to what he said. And she gave that spot not to, you know, one of the, I would say, far more centrist establishment Democrats that are typically on her show, but gave it to new representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And that has spawned a moment that went quite viral, I think, because she had a great response to what the president said. Here is a bit of it.
He has separated children from their families. He talked about what happened the day after Christmas. On the day of Christmas, a child died in ICE custody. The president should not be asking for more money to an agency that has systematically violated human rights. The president should be really defending why we are funding such an agency at all. The majority of the reason that people are undocumented is visa overstay. It's not because people are crossing a border illegally. It is because of visa overstay, which, mind you, he's talking about legal immigration. He's trying to restrict every form of legal immigration there is in the United States. He's fighting against family reunification. He's fighting against the diversity visa lottery. He's fighting against almost every way that people can actually legally enter this country, forcing them to become undocumented. And then he's trying to attack their undocumented status. This is systematic, it is wrong, and it is anti-American. And again, those women and children trying to come here with nothing but the shirts on their back to create an opportunity and to provide for this nation are acting more in an American tradition than this president is right now.
Oh, come on. That was, I mean, like on TYT, we've made versions of that argument. That was a better like quick version of how, like we focus on, he says it's about the border and he says it's about undocumented immigrants, but we understand that he's been going after legal immigrants as well. That was the perfect way to address this issue and make a very complex set of issues understandable.
Yep, so the whole
and
thing
it was
about,
delivered really fast. It was delivered like a human.
Absolutely.
So imagine,
exactly what I was gonna say.
Imagine if the response last night had not been Chuck Schumer and had not been Nancy Pelosi, but instead it was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib. Imagine if it was those two giving the response. I understand right-wing heads exploding. Shit, one danced and one swore. But they're humans. They're rightfully incensed about what's going on at the border and can communicate that in a way that people actually understand and will make them passionate as well.
Everything that was good about that moment was what Pelosi and Schumer were avoiding. They were told, hey, don't move. Hey, stay on script, and hey, sound calm.
Yeah.
So AOC was impassioned. She was facts-based, and she went after the things he was doing and actually gave the real crises that are going on in the country and actually gave a voice to the folks that we've been demonizing.
Yeah.
So the entire time he demonizes this group of people as like evil and killers and murderers going to come get you. Mm-hmm. And she goes, let me show you who they really are, and let me tell you why this is who they really are.
Yeah.
And people will hear that. And then people would get mad again if it was her and Rashida Tlaib going on. They would say, "Look at these two women in their anger. Look how mad they are. Why is she yelling? Because we're mad."
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, we know that Donald Trump, a lot of his support came from supposedly rightfully angry conservatives.
Yeah,
well, okay, so why are you allowed to be angry about the wrong people when we're angry about what's actually going on? Anyway, a great response from the new representative. Can't wait to see more on this topic. We are going to take a break though. When we come back. She's not the only representative strongly going after the president, Ayanna Pressley, with a great speech yesterday. We're going to break down, and then we're going to move into some good political news. Newly sworn in Representative Ayanna Pressley was given 1 minute to speak yesterday on the House floor, and she ended up getting reprimanded for what she said. So, what generated so much controversy that she had to be attacked for it? Here she is speaking on the House floor.
Mr. Speaker, I rise today in opposition to the occupant of the White House. Mr. Trump, you took an oath, just as I did 5 days ago, to protect and defend the Constitution and the American people. Sir, you dishonor that oath. You devalue the life of the immigrant, the worker, and the survivor. I see right through you, and so do the American people. This has nothing to do with border security. Your shutdown, another Trump-generated crisis, has brought a tsunami of hurt to the American people. So today I rise to lift the voices of the unheard. I rise today on behalf of the families concerned about feeding their children because their WIC benefits will run dry. I rise today in solidarity with the thousands of workers with calloused hands and broken spirits working for no pay. I rise today in support of the survivor fleeing violent hands, seeking safety only to find the shelter door locked because of your shutdown. I rise today in support of the American people who believe in the promise of this nation and ask for honest pay for an honest day's work. Today I rise as one and I stand as thousands. Thank you, and I yield back.
Members are reminded to refrain from engaging in personalities toward the president.
Okay. That was something.
Okay, so
and both the response, but much more importantly, what she said. That was strong.
No, exactly. Straight to the point, concise, and very true. Because that's what America, when people go on and constantly say, this is what American people want. This is what American people want. Hey, so when she says it, then we must remember to not, was it characterize the president or to have say anything
at the
about,
end? Engage in personalities.
In personalities.
I don't know what that means. It sounds dirty.
So you
honestly,
know what? So you know what? Go back tomorrow and say another one.
Yeah, I would engage in some
what
more
are they
personalities.
Do? What are they gonna do? This is what the American people wanted you there for,
yeah.
To represent them.
Yeah, and look at what gets you talked down to on the floor of the House. She was speaking in defense of the workers who got if this shutdown continues. For weeks, let alone the months or years Donald Trump says he's ready to keep it going for, imagine what will happen to those families, the bankruptcies, people losing their houses potentially. God knows, maybe there's businesses relying on loans and God, all of those issues, obviously. She spoke out in favor of migrants as well. Like, she recognizes the actual people who are being harmed by this. Donald Trump is obviously solely focused on himself in this. And he sees ruin if he doesn't get his wall. He thinks his base will turn against him. I think some might, but I think that they're locked and loaded. Yeah. I think they're never gonna turn against him.
All he's doing is give an excuse. I'm sorry, last thing.
So anyway, it was great.
This is the reason for representation in Congress and in the Senate that's different than just the traditional old white guy. Because they don't have the perspective of life experiences that other people have. She sees the way the struggles that some people would have, and she will voice it. No one else, they're worried about the rich folks that and what they paid them to tell them to do, everyone else in Congress. Yeah. So they represent them and let new people who represent the rest of America speak out.
Yeah.
And honestly, they don't like seeing that, and that's what most Americans love to see.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And I would love to see more out of Ayanna Pressley in that vein. Okay, let's move on to good news. Yesterday, good news in Florida, and that is that as a result of a ballot initiative back in the midterm elections of just a couple of months ago, those with felony convictions in their past who have served their time will be able to vote once again. That was Amendment 4. It restores voting rights for people as long as they've completed their sentences. So let's be clear about that. Anyone convicted of murder or felony sex offenses is excluded from that. But that leaves about 1.5 million people in Florida who up until yesterday had completed their sentences but were disenfranchised. That's 9.2% of the voting age population in Florida, which by itself, that's an insane percentage. Maybe we're locking up too many people. Let's look into it. And so that's overall, that's back in 2016, by the way, it was 17.9% of potential black voters in Florida as well. And so this affects all sorts of people, but there is a disproportionate influence in terms of disenfranchisement in Florida on the African American community.
So for that nearly 10% of the Florida population that wasn't able to vote before because of felony convictions, what you have to also, obviously, because murders and sex offenses are excluded from those numbers, in case people want to bring that part of it in. What kind of crimes and offenses were these? Because it's, I mean, this is the one thing that many people agree with Trump on that's bipartisan is his push to get some criminal justice reform. So after you get the criminal justice reform, as far as people being locked away for certain lengths of time, for certain crimes, also the people who had done this time and had felonies for something like drug possession, allow them to become members of society again and have a say in their government.
Yeah.
If you're against it, you're gonna have to give a really good reason as to why suddenly you're against people being represented now that they've done their time. And honestly, probably too much of it.
Yeah, and the thing is, on the other side, we played months ago in advance of the amendment, Tucker Carlson attacking the very idea that we would ever give the vote back to these people. And they do not feel any need to explain why they shouldn't be allowed to vote.
Yeah.
They simply assert it. It is crazy that you would let these people vote. Well, why? Why?
Why?
Why should they have no rights? Why are they dead to democracy even after they've paid their debt to society? So that is, of course, ridiculous. By the way, this is 1.5 million who will get the right to vote restored. That is great. Still leaves literally millions of people across the country in other states that have not made this move. So more work to do. And by the way, as a preview, so Desmond Mead is the president and CEO of Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, who fought for years to get this amendment on the ballot and is obviously a great part of why we now have this amazing news. Desmond Mead will be joining us on the Damage Report next Tuesday on the 15th. So we'll be interviewing about this, about how this was achieved and where we go from here.
Can I tell you the reason why they don't want to? They don't give the answers to why they don't want these folks.
Why is that?
To have? Because they have to listen to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, we keep calling them people. But are they really people? They committed felonies after all. Okay, one more bit of good news. Yesterday, Bill de Blasio announced that he is going to be expanding access to either very low cost or free healthcare inside of New York City for hundreds of thousands of individuals, including homeless, undocumented immigrants, and all of that. Great news. Today, more good news, going to be unveiling legislation that will need to be passed, of course, but that would guarantee 2 weeks of paid time off for workers inside of New York City. That would affect 500,000 people who don't currently have paid vacation inside of New York City. That's 200,000 workers in the hotel and food industries, 180,000 workers in professional and business services, such as cleaners, clerical workers, and sales workers, and 90,000 workers in retail. So, I mean, imagine the increase in just quality of life for half a million people inside of New York City if they're able to get this legislation
through. Think about how much are the people that are in charge of legislation and the laws in our country and workforce, how much they have so much disdain for Americans. We keep talking about how we're the greatest nation in the world, but we hate our citizens. Mm-hmm. So again, if you have something against this, tell us why you hate Americans. You're so patriotic. I love America, but you hate the citizens of the country? 2 weeks. Oh, man, you know what? It's sad. They're going to get 2 weeks off what, probably, John, every month? They get 2 weeks off a month, right?
No,
it's over a year.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Honestly, that's not enough. But you know what? It's something. I'm not going to complain too much. But if you think about it, 2 weeks in a year.
Yeah.
It's January, what, 9th right now, right? 2 weeks
you'd almost
from
be
now
done.
Until next January.
Exactly, yeah. And for those watching this abroad, you might think, well, that's crazy that you don't have it. And you're right. And if you just don't pay attention to this sort of thing, well, why is this such big news? Well, it's because no U.S. city or state requires paid time off for workers, while Puerto Rico does require employers to pay for time off. So yay for Puerto Rico there. And at least 20 countries, including New Zealand, Ireland, and Greece, mandate at least 10 days of paid vacation. Of course, in some of the socialist countries, they get far more than that. And so this would be moving in the right direction. We're not there yet. He is proposing it. Does have to be passed, so we'll be keeping an eye on that. We are going to take a break, though. When we come back, Dr. Bandy Lee is going to be joining us, Yale psychiatrist, breaking down Donald Trump's mental state as he enters potentially the worst year of his life. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Having a little bit of trouble connecting with our guest. Hopefully, you'll be joining us in the last block. Stick around for that. I have a feeling it is going to be fun and hopefully informative as well. But we do have other news to get to before that. We've been talking about this new documentary, Surviving R. Kelly, that has come out and is bringing up all of the evidence going back literally a couple of decades at this point about R. Kelly and his, you know, his actions in terms of marrying Aaliyah, a family saying imprisoning and brainwashing their daughters and all of that. So that's out there, and that's getting people to talk about this story once again. It also is leading to other things too, though. Celebrity and entertainment site The Blast says that the Fulton County District Attorney is actively investigating Kelly once again. According to The Blast, the DA is exploring the possibility of charging Kelly with false imprisonment for the alleged quote unquote cult, in which Kelly reportedly keeps young women at his homes, demanding that they have sex with him as he pleases and forbidding them from doing anything without his permission. Now, it is difficult at this point to get more corroborating information because the spokesman for the Fulton County District Attorney's Office declined to comment, and a rep for Kelly also had no comment, although that last bit is not exactly surprising. But various people who've been involved in this story going back literally years say that they have been contacted by this office. And so it does appear that the initial reports about R. Kelly being investigated have something to them.
I mentioned a little bit yesterday when we were talking about just how the outrage is and the way we're responding as far as the court of public opinion, right? Mm. And it's a bit mixed, but the outrage is finally happening. This isn't new. We knew about this stuff before, but it wasn't. I guess it wasn't discussed as much. Again, maybe it's more of how we're on technology and Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all that. But the discussions are happening more because a television docuseries came out about it. Which, okay, it seems a little sad that we can't pay attention until there's a show about it. But cool, whatever it takes. Because there's a lot of people who stopped messing with R. Kelly years ago. Mm-hmm. But it's finally catching on with more folks. And it's allowing us to see the people who refuse to see that reality as well. So you can find out from your friends, your fathers, your uncles, your cousins who are like, yeah, but why are you guys going after this guy? Mm-hmm. There's plenty of good reasons. But so if you're upset about this investigation, potential investigation that's expanding, what are we concerned about? Again, yeah, we know that because people like to bring up that it's a black entertainer. Mm-hmm. And how black folks in the country, and I've said it many times in our history, have been wrongfully accused and convicted of things. So when you bring that up as the reason why you don't want this happening, he's rich, he's well known, he's going to get good legal representation.
Yeah.
He'll be fine. But also, in order for this to happen, there has to be all these multitudes of people that have given corroborating evidence and stories and accounts of what they've seen him do. They have to all be in on this conspiracy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a different kind of thing. So when we're upset about a 20-year-old in Alabama getting hemmed up for something he didn't do just because of who he is, it's different than R. Kelly, who's known, who's been surrounded by folks, black people as well, crazy, who also got a chance to see what he's been doing and give their stories behind what he's done. Some have assisted him in doing it, but they're still giving their stories. All these people have to be in on the conspiracy just to get this one black man.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other unknown black men they can go after if they're after black men.
Yeah,
in this case.
That's true.
Again, it doesn't lower the fact that we've done that to black folks, so don't get me wrong. But in this case, it's just not the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what you're describing, that reaction of defense, I think that people sometimes have impulses that are, they're coming from the right place and they're just being applied to situations that just don't merit them. R. Kelly is not these other cases. Mm-hmm. His history is not the same, and not just ancient history, but one of R. Kelly's representatives, I don't remember the name in particular, but faced charges for threatening family members of one of these girls. Like, there's some questionable stuff going on, not 20 years ago, but in the very recent future. And so you can rightfully be concerned about systemic injustice towards the sort of person that R. Kelly is, going back literally since before the US was a country and continues till today, and be wrong about applying it to this potentially.
Yeah.
And by the way, he can have defenders, certainly. He's gonna have literal legal defenders, but he can have defenders in popular culture too. That does not mean there should not be an investigation. That the concerns of these families and people who've interacted with him going back literally decades should not be heard out.
Just protect, we should be a society that protects the vulnerable and the people who are targeted. Mm-hmm. And when you're going after children, women, particularly women and children of color, we know that those are folks that are looked over and bypassed the most in our mm-hmm. society. So again, I've always said it before, when black folks play a role in society. You know, we're part of it, we buy into the system too. As much as it abuses us, we buy into the way it works.
Yeah.
Black folks are afraid of black folks, the way that, you know, I think Chris Rock said it before. When you're an ATM, you're still afraid of the black guy walking down the street behind you because you're afraid too, because we buy into the same stuff. So you buy into the fact that black women are the lowest on the totem pole, and you're going to continue to abuse them or overlook when someone else abuses them. You have to rethink your approach.
Yeah, yeah, and it's interesting that you say that, because when we were speaking with David Dennis Jr. last Friday, made a very good point about that the approach that some people take to this is sometimes less about the race of the person who did it versus the race of the person who it was done to.
Absolutely.
And actually, in terms of, I think it's a capital punishment convictions, that's actually borne out in the justice mm-hmm. system. In any event, we do have to take a break, but stick around a little bit more for you after this. Welcome back, everyone. We return with breaking news. The EPA might well have a new director, or a new permanent director, I should say. Andrew Wheeler, who's been acting as the head of the EPA for the last 6 months, is apparently going to be nominated by Donald Trump to be the new head, you know, on into, well, about a year. He'll probably end up resigning under the weight of all the scandals and all of that. But he's been running it for a bit. We've broken down his resume. He is a coal lobbyist by trade. So just to give you a bit of an idea of the approach of the EPA under Andrew Wheeler, I would say it's going to be negative vis-a-vis the environment.
So as you said, we went to the background of Wheeler more. And I don't know, it would be surprising if this was a normal situation, if he hadn't appointed other folks. I mean, was it Rick Perry was appointed to the agency he wanted to eliminate? Mm-hmm.
When he could remember that it existed.
So it's par for the course. I just want to point out specifically what it was. Previously worked for the law firm that represented coal magnate Robert Murray. You heard mm-hmm. of that guy before? Mm-hmm. And lobbying against the Obama administration's environmental regulators. So he served as the chief counsel to the U.S. Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works, and as the chairman Inhofe with the snowball. So this is a guy that's supposed to head the government agency that's supposed to protect the environment. Mm-hmm. But his previous work has been about tearing down regulations that would protect the environment. Yeah. I don't see how anyone, I don't care if this is the president of your party, you walk into it and go, this makes sense. Well, even if you don't like the agency.
What if?
This just doesn't make sense.
What if you thought that the agency never should have been established in the first place and was only there as some sort of communist plot to put the reins on American industry? There are people who actually believe that. And so they would want someone like Andrew Wheeler
in charge. We talked about how the coal industry is going down and not because and how the number of coal plants that have had to shut their doors in the first 2 years of the Trump administration has already outpaced the 8 years under Obama. Mm-hmm. Not because Trump hates coal, because we know how he campaigned. We know what he did with his first EPA guy. They went to coal mines, went down there and said, yeah, we like coal. We're going to put on a hard hat with our name on it, because mm-hmm. that means something. They're out to protect this industry, and it's still dying.
Yeah.
So this is the guy you put in place. I wonder which direction they're going to take this agency.
Exactly. Look. The stakes could not be higher in this area over the next 2 years. They have been high. I do think that we lost something permanently in Donald Trump becoming a president at all when it comes to the climate. I think that pulling out of the Paris Climate Accords, all the deregulation he's done, we can attempt to manage the damage that was done. We can push for a Green New Deal. That will help. It'll help us avoid the worst potential fate. I don't think that we can ever get back the time that will have been wasted. But right now, like, there should be nothing more at the top of your priorities list, I think, than getting us back on course to do what we need to do with regard to the environment. Because he is not going to suddenly change his loyalties because now he's the permanent head of the EPA. He was a coal lobbyist. When he finally leaves in shame, he will go back to being a coal lobbyist. He will have had this same set of priorities all along the way. And I agree with you too. In terms of his desire to bring back coal and bring back steel, it was like I was talking about yesterday on our live coverage about his address. He wants to project an image of strength, but he is too stupid to be strong. Because when you try to solve a problem with something that will not actually help, that is not only a waste of resources, it also stops you from correctly identifying what you need to do. So when he puts new tariffs in place to protect the steel industry, that gets back 1/18 of the jobs that will be lost from those tariffs. That's dumb. And dumb isn't strong, dumb is weak. Especially when those tariffs also hurt the solar industry, an industry that's already larger than coal, growing far faster, is the future. He is helping to potentially set that back by multiple years. That's dumb, and dumb isn't strong. And so when it comes to steel, when it comes to coal, this is not only just a symbol, and symbols can be in some cases a waste of time but don't necessarily do much harm. This is harming our economy. It's certainly harming our environment.
It's you know, when people run for office and we point out their shortcomings, maybe things they don't know about, mm-hmm. and this is the biggest example of how that is fleshed out. When someone who only cares about presentations and what things look like and how they come off and who they can excite, which is all this president knows how to do, and not have any of the meat to any argument, this is the result. When you say he's a great businessman his whole life, when it's obvious that he hasn't been, the reason to point out that he's a horrible businessman and actually doesn't know how to negotiate things is because when he's in office, he's going to take those skills and destroy that too. Mm-hmm. So when Sarah Palin didn't know anything and she'd go into office, at least there was maybe going to be people surrounding her that'd be like, listen, Sarah, you don't know what you're talking about. And she might, I don't know her, but she might go, yeah, I don't really know much about that. You guys handle that. Mm-hmm. This is a different type of person.
Yeah.
He's just as clueless, but he's willing to say, I know it all. Listen to me instead and look at what everything he touches turns to garbage, just like in his personal and professional life.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
It's continuation.
So this was something you could predict.
Yeah.
In everything he touches, because that's the way it actually happened in his life.
I would argue that we did predict it. And yeah, we warned people for literally more than a year. Okay, with that, there's a lot that I'd like to get to in terms of news. And by the way, we were unfortunately not able to connect with our guest. Hopefully in the near future, we'll be able to have Dr. Lee on to break down Donald Trump, his mental health, and how it actually will affect our lives on a day-to-day basis. But I want to end the little bit of time that we have. We're available as a podcast. Many of you listen to the podcast. Others, you know, you watch the videos either live or when they're uploaded on YouTube. I don't know if you know, but discoverability of podcasts is effectively non-existent. The only way that new people discover podcasts is when people rate it and when they review it. Super competitive. And so I want to thank all of you who have done the ratings, done the reviews. And I want to do that by reading one or two of those that you've recently done. Orthengren posted a review saying, absolutely a necessity in my life. As a member, this is the best podcast on the network. I love the format of the show. The interviews are informing and build a new perspective on a variety of issues. My C says, always informative, honest, and lighthearted, even in view of dire events. Sympathetic, understanding, and upbeat. inspirational and uplifting, great host and co-hosts. And John Iadarola is a good example of a good example. I don't know exactly what that means, but thank you for those reviews. And so if you go and you rate the podcast and you review it, there's a good chance that I will read your review live on the show on a future episode.
Wow,
so thank
you. The one about JR Wednesdays.
I have been scrolling, I searched and nothing came up, unfortunately. No, I'm kidding, they obviously love you. Thank you for joining us, as always. Thank you for watching, everybody. Tomorrow, so much to cover. I'll see you then. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Iadarola. I'll see you soon.